suppose you all know how ordinary television works. You photograph something.
Sure, I do. You photograph something, then the photograph is split up into millions of tiny pieces, and they go whizzing through the air down to your TV set where they're all put together again in the right order.
You should open your mouth a little wider when you speak.
This is Mike TV episode 17, in which we will be covering AMC's Preacher, season 4, episode 7, entitled Messiahs. My name is Lisa, and joining me is my co-host Dean. Hi, Dean. Welcome.
Hey, Lisa. How are you doing today?
Wonderful. Excited to talk about Preacher. This was another great episode. They are definitely giving us more to chew on, more to think about as we near the end of this show.
Yeah, we're finally starting to get a few more peeks to God's plan. And of course, we still don't know if Jesse will be around for God's plan, but he seems to be part of it one way or the other.
Yeah, there were some parts. So my overall thoughts, you know, there were some parts that felt like still a little fillerish, you know, like, come on, why are we doing this? But then the payoffs were so big that it was okay. And then we were talking right before we were recording, and you said something about how it ended.
Yeah, this episode, for what seemed like a lot was going on, it went by really fast. And right when it seemed to ramp up to where we were finally about to get some real insight to what God's doing, boom, it's the end of the episode. So it kind of snuck up on me at the end, which is good. It had a very big cliffhanger.
Yes, it did. Oh, I can't wait for the next episode. But okay, let's dive into episode 7, Messiahs. We open with Tulip and Cassidy. They're burying Jesse in the outback. The saint is watching from afar on the hill. And then in the next scene, the plane takes off. So they're leaving the outback. I guess they don't really get very far, but we'll get back to that.
Right.
Jesse, then the next scene is, well, were you shocked at all to see them burying Jesse?
Only for the fact that I guess I didn't expect us to cut to them already burying him. Yeah, I didn't know if it would start off with him, you know, in the afterlife, because the preview made it seem like it was going to cut right to him in heaven. In fact, we even talked about maybe, or I had predicted that I thought I wouldn't have been surprised if almost the first 40 minutes of the, or the first 30 minutes of the episode were all just him in heaven before we even came back. So yeah, it was different from what I expected.
Quote unquote heaven.
Yes. Yes. That's why I say the afterlife.
yeah. Okay. So speaking of, the next scene, Jesse is at a beautiful lake fishing with a girl. She's real cute. She looks to be about 8 years old. And then along comes Fior. Oh my God, it's Fior. Yay. Love him. Love that actor. He's really good and funny. And Jesse looks at him, you know, Fior says, do you know who I am? And Jesse says, yes. And Fior's like, do you know who you are? And Jesse's like, yeah, I'm Jesse Custer. And Fior's like, okay, that's good. And then Jesse asks if they're in heaven, and this is important. Fior's response is simply, well, it ain't the south of France. And then Jesse, interestingly, as they're walking off, Jesse asks about the girl and who that girl is, and Fior just says, oh, that's just some girl fishing. Now, I for sure 100% took this girl to be Jesse and Tulip's daughter in heaven, the one who died, you know, went still in the womb.
Yeah, absolutely, because they even just mentioned her an episode ago or two ago. I think he mentioned her to the saint.
Yes.
And I'm assuming that's who it was kind of supposed to be, as far as his hell would kind of seemingly start as having the daughter, or not realizing what he's missed, maybe. But yeah, definitely, I thought it was the daughter too.
Yeah, and I think Fjord's dismissiveness is just his lack of knowledge, you know, perhaps because there's just so many people in heaven. How's Fjord supposed to know that that O is Jesse's daughter, you know? But it's not really heaven. What am I saying? I'm still buying into it. You think maybe it is just some girl?
I don't know.
Knowing what we know now?
I mean, we're obviously going to get more into the fact that it's not heaven, because I kind of got confused as, was Fjord in hell, or was he somehow breaking into Jesse's vision of hell? Because that kind of became unclear too, because I know he does say that he was it. What mostly Jesse's seen as a facade, but then at some point he goes, okay, but here's the real chair, and he actually does show, like, you know, we go into the past of God, so there, he seems to have some control over what Jesse's seen.
It's not really fully fleshed out, is it? It's not really explained. Okay, and the plot thickens with only three more episodes to go after this one. So anyway, they start to walk along. You know, they walk all along real beautiful, endless landscape, again, reminiscent of Legion, I was thinking, as they were walking through, just kind of just different scenery scapes. And Fjord is telling Jesse about how there's, you know, there's always been this endless war between heaven and hell, and now how the scales have really tipped now that God has left. And then he says, you know, and with this summit going on between Jesus and Hitler, well, he's just glad that Jesse is there. And then they walk into this giant room with a big throne, and there's a bunch of guards in there, angel guards, and they tell him they would like Jesse to take over heaven.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Why not?
That's Jesse's response.
Oh, yeah, I know, it is. Cool. I thought the same thing. I was like, do it. Interesting little turn of events there. So we'll come back to that. Any other thoughts about that scene? But we're definitely.
I love that Jesse takes in, but doesn't actually take in anything that Fjord's saying to him. You know, he's even like, wait, what do you want me to do? And he's like, I just told you. I just said everything. Yeah. He says, you told me Jesus was no Hitler.
Yeah. Dominic Cooper is just great. He's got really good comedic timing with anybody they pair him with. Okay, so then we get scenes of the plane landing, and Tulip and Cassidy are just driving the hell out of Dodge in Tulip's car. A little interesting kind of somber mood. The radio is just nothing but static. And finally, Cassidy even tries to turn it off after just flipping from nothing but static after static. And Tulip turns it back on, I guess, because she'd rather listen to static than silence. But anyway, they're definitely clearly sad. I mean, as they would be. They drive into the night, and finally Tulip pulls over to the side of the road and pulls out Jesse's letter and reads it. And God, I'm dying to know what's in this letter, and we'll never know, which really upsets me. But she reads it. It's very emotional. Her face is amazing. Ruth Negga, just 100% incredible acting. She's crying as she reads it. And then she takes the letter into a nearby church and knocks over all the pews, sits down, screams for God to come, and then sees a painting on the wall of God holding Jesus in his arms. And then she sets the letter on fire and burns the church down. So unless they show a flashback, I guess that letter, I had said last episode that I thought maybe that letter was on the nightstand in the hotel, that flash forward scene that we saw with Tulip and Cassidy, but wrong on that.
I think we'll see it or hear it, or we'll at least get the gist of it. We're going to find out something about it.
I mean, now they've really set it up to be something, right? If we do get it, I don't know. I don't think we're going to get it. I think we just have to know it was a very heartfelt letter.
Yeah, I loved her running through and destroying the church to try to get God's attention, just for the fact that he's shown up to her so many times so far over the past two seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And now when she actually wants him, he's not there.
Yeah. I thought he would come. But, you know, Tulip is a very hard person, right? And Cassidy is too. So the fact that that letter moved them both as much as it did, it's got to be, I don't know. I wish we'd gotten it. I don't think we will. That's a prediction we can make. We'll see. All right. Meanwhile, Cassidy hears a chicken coop nearby, looks at his arm, which is still badly burned from, you know, having been forced to let go of Jesse from the plane. And he knows he needs blood to heal it. So he decides to stop into this farmer's house. And the farmer is just a nice, unassuming man, just figures that Cassidy's out of petrol and invites Cassidy in straight away. And they're standing in the kitchen and Cassidy grabs, you know, a really nice towel with some cross stitch and stuff on it. Like, that is clearly a nice towel. It is so crazy. And he starts wiping his muddy shoes with it, which is just rude as hell. And the farmer asks him not to do that. And, you know, Cassidy just kind of is very flippant with him and starts asking, you know, where the missus is and learns that the farmer's there alone, so that his wife has passed. And finally, the farmer starts to really get creeped out by Cassidy because Cassidy is acting very creepy. And then the farmer says, you know, what are you doing here? And Cassidy gets in really close. We get this great close-up of Joseph Gilgan. I loved this shot. And he says, I'm here to eat your chickens. And then the screen cuts away. But I am definitely assuming here that he ate that farmer. I think that he probably maybe ate the chickens for dessert, but it's my guess that he ate the farmer. What do you think?
I don't think that he ate the farmer, and this seems to be a
pretty menacing.
This seems to be a point of contention on lots of things I've seen. Mm-hmm. I think he was trying to find a reason to eat him. I think that's why he picked up that obviously sentimental looking towel and wiped his shoes off, kind of was intentionally being an asshole. I think he wanted that farmer to not be so nice to him. I mean, even he almost seemed disappointed even when he first walked in and the guy just invited him right in and like was going to give him food. So I think he went in there with the intention to, I need a reason to want to do this, but I think he just ate the chickens.
I think Cassidy's pretty cold and pretty hard at this point. He's pretty damn pissed, and I don't know that he's holding as fast and true to his quote-unquote moral ways.
He doesn't tend to kill. I mean, we don't usually see him just kill innocent people for the sake of killing innocent people. Like, at the Grail, at least he can make the, you know, he's defending himself and he's breaking out, and everyone there wants him dead. So, I don't know. It seemed... He always comes off as a nice guy to innocent people. I mean, think about the fact that he never killed anyone while he was at that vampire house and everything, you know? And
yeah, that's true. Well, then wouldn't a funnier beat have been for him to do that, still all scary and creepy, and have the farmer go, oh, well, okay then, why didn't you say that in the first place? Go right ahead, you know, or something, you know, just to kind of
either that
put
or
the closure maybe on that. But maybe the leaving it in a gray area was part of the shtick, and I'm cool.
Yeah, I guess along with the blood, he should have had, like, chicken feathers all over his face. That would have made more sense, but...
Maybe he had
He hiccups up feathers, like, when he sneezed and the dust came out in the elevator, just to, yeah.
That's what I said, maybe he ate the farmer and had the chickens for dessert, and he did both, you know? All right, well, we'll never know, but hopefully that farmer is alive and well, just with a dirty sentimental towel.
Yeah, and no chickens.
Yeah, it's okay. He can get some new ones. Back in the car, Tulip tells Cassidy she's got a plan to get God, so more to come on that. Definitely her plan did not unfold the way I thought it would, so we'll get there to that. We get this really fun music. Oh, I should have written down the song. Do you remember what it was? It's the barista scene.
No.
A disguised Featherstone is making coffees. It is hilarious. It's a very, you know, Better Call Saul, Breaking Bad kind of scene. Very detailed of these coffees being made. And, of course, they're Starbucks style with the Sharpies written on. And there's one for Jesus and one for Hitler. And I love that there's one for Hoover too. Also,
can you remember what the logo was? Because I remember it being funny and it had some kind of religious tone to it, but I can't remember for the life of me what it was.
I can't either.
I don't know. I'll have to remember that for next time. There was something about the cup I liked, but I can't remember what it was.
Yeah, it's definitely a take on Starbucks, right? It's the green and white, but it's, anyway, so her disguise is really good. Her accent's really good. She definitely has Hoover too fooled, but she starts to very nonchalantly ask the Allfather, or ask Hoover too about the Allfather, and he says very sternly, "The Allfather's business is the Allfather's business." Yeah. And Featherstone deduces, "Oh, well, then he must still be away." And we get this cut to this brief, thankfully brief scene of a dingo running very fast through the desert, through the outback, with what is definitely a penis hanging out of his mouth. Yeah. It's all pixelated and shadowy, or it's all pixelated and, you know, but it's hilarious. And then we get this overhead shot of Hare Star, and he's lying there. It's still in his grail white grail uniform. He's in utter pain, and his crotch is all bloody. And then just a shadowy figure approaches from above, or, you know, looms over him. So we can definitely discuss now the probability of who that shadowy figure is based on what I know from the comics, or we can save it till the end.
Well, you go ahead, because I have no idea.
No. So in the comic books, you know, they're definitely following the trajectory of Hare Star's maiming, and okay, it kind of finally comes to a climax in the comic books when he is his penis is bitten off, but by a dog at God's command. And I believe it's like either God's or Jesse's command. I think God's. And some cannibals find him next.
Oh God.
And eat his legs. Oh, and nice. So he's now legless after that. And then after that, he's finally rescued by Featherstone, but he's just the stump of a man.
Stump of a man.
She still loves him all the way through it, too. It's just, of course. I know. It's so sad for her. But so I definitely think that these are going to be Aborigine-style cannibals. Mm-hmm. I definitely think we're going down the road of Hare Star losing a leg, both legs, or something else that they are going to for sure eat. And it's going to be gross. So, all right. I guess I should have given a spoiler alert. But you know what? This is on the Radio Labyrinth channel. They know that everything is fair game, right?
Right, yeah.
People listening, they know. All right. Then this, okay. So this felt like the first scene that I thought went on too long. It was a shtick that really wasn't needed. Could have been summed up with just a broadcast of something in the background, but instead, we get this long opening scene. In fact, I had forwarded through the commercials and actually had to back up. So maybe it was a trickery, too, to force me to realize that I was forwarding through part of the show. But we just get this news scene of It's Morning America, which that was funny. And it's just three newscasters, and two are just being, you know, typical newscastery selves. And then the other one is sitting there freaking out because no one is addressing the situation that's going down between New Zealand and Australia. And his line, I quote, is that what's happening is it threatens, or what's going on between those two countries, he says, threatens a wider nuclear exchange that will leave the planet an ash-choked shitscape.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, they could have really done this without, I don't know, the 3 or 4 minutes they dedicated to it.
I thought it was funny, and it was a nice little kind of poke at what we do see in the real world with news sometimes, where things that seemingly are important but don't get covered, especially on a show like that one seemed to be, where it was like the cheery, happy people.
Yeah.
And it's almost the opposite, of course, of what we see in a lot of other news shows where every little thing is turned into the worst thing. But yeah, in this case, something actually terrible has happened. Literally a nuclear bomb has gone off and two countries are going to war. But what's going on? What happened on your weekend?
Well, yes, I guess that is true. I mean, I don't know. It just felt like it. It was funny. Anyway, there's more filler to come. So, and I'm not complaining. I'm worried. There's still a lot to do. But meanwhile, in heaven, Jesse is standing there contemplating taking the throne. There's this like cool trippy scene of him imagining himself as the alpha, and it does like that kaleidoscope split, and his eyes go white, and he imagines himself on the throne in charge. So he really is definitely contemplating it, but in the end he tells Fjord no, and then he looks at all of the angels standing there and he calls them traitors. And they pull their swords to attack, but Fjord says to stop. There'll be plenty of time for fighting when hell arrives.
Yeah, I think that obviously we know some of it is a trick in the real sense of the word, but I think him, quote, taking the seat is also what God wants him to do, but I think it's some kind of trap. And I almost feel like Jesse is realizing that. And it wasn't even necessarily he was contemplating like wanting it. He felt what it could be. Like, I think he actually, when he touched it, he saw that. It wasn't him imagining. It was almost him like getting a glimpse of what it would be like to be God. And that would, for most people, be almost like a temptation. Like, you're now like the Alpha and the Omega, the all powerful. But he doesn't want that.
No. It's interesting. Well, we'll get there, but at this point, I did start to think, where is Genesis? Were you thinking that at all?
I guess not. I don't know.
Because in the past, when Genesis has gone into beings and, ultimately caused them to explode in their death, their untimely death, it's made him leave that body and go into some, back to Jesse. But, presumably when... Anyway, put a pin in that. So,
well, but we haven't seen, it did skip from him hitting the ground to him getting buried. So maybe we'll see something eventually happen.
But he uses the word, later on. So,
oh, that's true.
Anyway, we skip to a blink if you miss it, but we get another one of those overhead cargo ship scenes.
Which you called last week. You said that, like, I wonder how they'll get back. Maybe we'll see another cargo ship.
Can't believe. I'm sure it's this exact same thing, too, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Anyway, and now we're in Williamsburg, New York. First, I thought Williamsburg, Virginia, but no. This is definitely New York. And Tulip and Cassidy are speaking with, hey, oh my God, it's Danny. Remember Danny? Fuck no. No one remembers Danny. Want to know why? They didn't put her in the previously on like they should have. That girl had barely a storyline in season one. Remember anything about Danny?
No. In fact, I looked her up to make sure it wasn't Julia Roberts.
I know. She looks like her.
Because then I realized who it was from. The Commander Lawrence's wife in Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, that is her.
Who I remember telling my wife, she kind of looks like a low key, a knockoff Julia Roberts. But with that hair, especially, she looked like Julia Roberts without makeup.
Damn, I definitely got the Julia Roberts vibe. And I also thought, where have I seen her before? And I was like, oh, well, of course, from season one. I knew she was a part of season one, but I couldn't remember the storyline to save my life.
Yeah, when I looked her up, I was like, oh, she's been on the show in two other episodes. Huh, who knew?
She was, if you recall, they took kind of a detour in season one and had some Tulip stuff in Dallas or some.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was Tulip was trying to, it had a little bit of Hair Star. This woman was a go-between between Tulip and Hair Star. For something mob related, but I do remember it as part of season one, this woman was trying to get Tulip to kill her husband. Who wasn't there a third? Remember, there was a third man involved with Tulip and Jesse's shenanigans when they were robbing banks.
Yes,
I think that was her husband. They were set out to kill that man, but in the end, they let him go, right?
Oh, okay. Was it? Because you think it would be weird, or they would have shown his face more when she kills him in the diner later.
Well, I don't even think we ever got him when they were, they never really showed him a whole lot.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. Again, definite cause. I guess a show when it is doing a great job of wrapping up is when it makes you want to go back and start the show all over again. And
right.
They're doing it, man. I have questions that only rewatching season one are going to answer. So more to come on that. Anyway, so yeah, it's Danny. She was in season one. It's out there. So Tulip is telling Danny, you know what we want and you know who we want. And Danny says, sure, but you know first what I want. And then it cuts to Tulip and Cassidy are in a New York deli, and Cassidy's having some funny lines about how great that, you know, New York is, how he should have never left. And, you know, especially the food and the pubs are open all night. And then he gets very serious and tells Tulip, you know, he'll do it. He'll do it for her. You know, but she says, no, she'll do it. And of course, you know, at this point, we don't know what she's talking about, what either one of them are talking about. But Then she quickly stands up and shoots the man who is sitting behind them. She shoots him in the head and walks out. And then it's kind of just this kind of pause. The camera just lingers on the scene. And it's real funny. Cassidy throws some money on the table before he casually just strolls out behind her. So still didn't exactly know what was happening here. But we do, when they go back to visit Danny, learn that this is what Danny wanted Tulip to do. So
yeah, I did like this whole scene, even when they go find Danny, because there are a couple clips of them driving around and go. It reminded me again of how much I liked the little almost 70s cop style, you know, intro they had when they busted into the New Zealand or the Australian police station in the last episode. Yes, so I do like it when they're kind of not sad and they're together. They do have a nice little chemistry going.
They do. They have the best chemistry on the show, I think. There's a lot of really good chemistry, but Cassidy and Tulip are really, really good, I think. All right. So I'm going to try to make it through this without just completely just dying laughing. So the funniest scene of the entire episode, in my opinion, is next. This is the Jesus meeting, quote unquote, Humperdew for the first time. Hitler has brought Jesus into this room that Hitler had discovered a few episodes back. And the scene opens on Jesus hugging Humperdew. And it's a close-up of his face, and he's very happy, and he's saying, my child. And then he says, oh, and backs away really quickly, because under Humperdew's robes, we see that Humperdew has a ginormous erection.
Yes.
which continues to definitely dominate the scene for the rest of the scene here. But
yeah, and Hitler with the fantastic question of, aside from the erection, what do you think?
So good. Hitler sits down at that piano and begins to play the old Soft Shoe. And this Humperdew clone that we know, of course, is the clone, just kind of stands there and moans and rocks around with his big boner. And Jesus is not fooled. He's perplexed. He said, I thought the Messiah was supposed to be a good dancer. Hitler doesn't even respond to him. He just stands up and shoots that Humperdew dead. And then Jesus freaks out.
That was my favorite part, where he shoots him and then Jesus just goes, Jesus Christ!
Yes. Yeah, Jesus takes his own name in vain. Which, if you remember, God does that in last episode. Yeah,
right.
So I liked that too. You're right, he does. And then Hitler explains to him that, you know, it's not the Messiah, of course. He's just a clone. And there's a whole bunch of them. He says there's a whole bunch of them running around like dumb monkeys. And Hitler explains that the real Messiah, the one that they need to end the world, is lost to them. And then Hitler says, well, who cares, though? We have a perfectly good Messiah right here, a deserving Messiah. And of course, Jesus, I'm talking about you.
Yeah, see, we had this conversation last week about if we knew if Hitler did know if that was the fake one or not. And I think Hitler is kind of the, you know, he's, for intents and purposes, he's kind of the shadow king of this show, or he's the one, he's trying to pull strings behind everyone's back at this point. You know, Hitler's
Legion
always
reference
scheming.
For those who don't know.
Yeah, yeah. If you've listened to this show, you know.
Yeah, you should.
He's always got like a backup plan. He's pulling strings. He's got something he's trying to get done, even ahead of Airstar and the apocalypse, I'm thinking. So he obviously must think that based off the apocalypse, he's going to come out on top of all this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think, you know, Hitler is almost like the audience surrogate in a way, because I'm sure this has happened before, but in this case, we definitely were asking before, well, if Jesus is there, why can't he just be the Messiah? Why did he even need Humperdue? And we're not alone in asking that question. It's definitely on minds of all Preacher fans, so we're not staking claim to that.
Yeah, and this is also my new favorite tag team, the Jesus Hitler bromance. That's, I'm shipping them hard. I want them to be the duo that pushes through. If Jesus and Hitler tag team together to save the day, this will just be the best.
It does seem very logical. Hitler is making sense. And again, thinking what all the audience has been thinking is, why isn't Jesus just the Messiah? You don't need the Humperdue, crazy assholes. You should know this. Anyway, Hitler is hilarious. Once again, loving Hitler. He's great.
Yeah, this is a Hitler you can get behind.
Yeah, this is for sure. Anyway, next scene, we see Danny. They're back in Danny's office. Danny's on the phone. She's getting the call, and she's learning that her husband is dead. This is, we know now, this is what she wanted Tulip to do. And again, I had in my notes here that, remember, this was a thing from season one. I remember this woman wanted Tulip to kill her husband. Tulip wouldn't do it. So
yeah, sure,
Danny even makes a remark here about, like, or Tulip says, you've wanted me to do this for 10 years. Well, now I've done it.
Yep.
So I love that bookend, that season one to season four bookend on that definitely forgettable storyline. So this is where it starts to, you know, maybe feel a little fillerish, because now Danny is starting to renege on the offer. Tulip keeps demanding, you know, for Danny to do what's promised, and Danny keeps saying, well, where's Jesse? And then Danny just says, well, I'm not going to go through with it. And it is a funny scene. Tulip flies across her desk and just starts to beat the shit out of Danny, just very brutally.
Yeah, it starts off plain funny, but this is one of the first times you really feel that. You can feel the anger in this beatdown, as opposed to in the past, they kind of come off comedic or whatever, but she's at her last resort at this point.
Yeah. And at this point, we really don't know what she and Cassidy are after. Did you suspect? I did not.
No. When they get to this temple, I had another thought that was going to come, but no, okay. I didn't expect them to eventually get who they get.
Yeah, I didn't either, and it was funny because Sean nails it. So when we're watching it, I was like, what is this they want? He didn't get it at this point, but he does when they're walking down that hall. All right, so before we get there, we cut back to Jesse, and he is still at this point, the angel guards have left. It's just Jesse and Fjor, and Jesse says, I can't believe I'm dead and still wanting a cigarette. And good thing Fjor has some in his little in his gown. He pulls some out, gives them to him,
and says, helps him stay off the speedballs.
Yeah, he has that funny line about, well, it's a nasty habit, but it does help me stay off the speedballs. And what's really funny too is, as soon as he says that, then it prompts him to ask Jesse, how's Cassidy, by the way, as his follow-up line. Anyway, and Jesse's like, well, he's alive, to which they have a little chuckle. Then Jesse is kind of, you know, he's sleuthed this out here. He's kind of in disbelief that he's in heaven, what with all the sins he's committed. And Fjor admits that, yeah, he's done some bad things. But, you know, it's, you know, who goes to heaven and who goes to hell? That's a complicated thing. And Jesse explains, you know, that he had to get away from his only two friends because he was afraid he was going to kill them. So we definitely got an answer there. And he says, you know, if God knows that was in my heart, then he wouldn't send me here. And Fiore says, well, it's because God knows you've forgiven them. And then Jesse says, well, but I haven't forgiven them. And then the light bulb moment hits and Jesse realizes he's not in heaven. We have this great quick cut to that overhead weird spinning light fixture that was in the hell cells all last season, you know. So it's definitely something we've seen before. Very prominent prop. So we now know that Jesse is in a hell prison and he's trapped in a cell. And this is where he does try to use Genesis and says, open the door, but nothing happens. He is just trapped. What did you think of these scenes?
I thought it was a good reveal.
Agree.
And that it really, it does continue to be funny that, and I hope that we are told that at least that throne room is supposed to be what it actually looks like, but I still am curious as what the concept of heaven is in the preacher realm, especially how they would depict it on TV, because they make everything else so batshit crazy. I can't imagine heaven is just, you know, the paradise we all think it is, or, you know, we're accustomed to seeing as far as everything being all la-di-da and everything, but.
See, and I wonder if, okay, so I guess this is jumping ahead a little bit, but I wonder if Fiore is in hell also, and we know that this show's iteration of hell is kind of reliving maybe your worst day or your worst moment over and over and over again from the depths of this dark cell with this weird spinning light above you. So if Fiore is living his worst day over and over again, maybe his worst day is that scene we see at the end where he has to confess to God that they've lost Genesis. So I'm wondering, in other words, if he somehow has the ability to bring Jesse into his landscape, or, you know, into what he's seen, and the scenery that he creates is an actual depiction of heaven.
We definitely saw Eugene and Hitler go into each other's hells, didn't we?
Oh yeah, yeah. So yeah.
So of course, the only thing is that Fiore's not in the cell with Jesse, but there could still be some way he's pulling him in, or maybe he is. Maybe he's sitting in the corner. We didn't notice him or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure we'll get some answers next episode. Well, I assume. I can't say I'm sure of anything with this show, but I did like it. It was a good reveal. I did like too that Jesse says, "But you said we were in heaven." You know, he's kind of like, and yeah, he's like, "No, I never said that." All right. So, sitting in a car outside of the temple is Tulip and Cassidy and Danny, and this is Danny has a very bloody nose and it's full of a bunch of tissues. That's always a comedic thing, right? It was funny. She keeps asking, where is Jesse? And finally Cassidy tells her that Jesse is dead. And then Tulip looks at her and just demands to be shown. And Danny pulls the bloody tissues out and says, okay. And they exit the car. So we're inching closer to this reveal. Meanwhile, Hoover 2, oh God, I did love the Hoover 2 stuff too. This scene too, again, another Hitler scene. Perhaps even better than the Humperdoo boner is this scene right here. Hoover 2 is lurking outside of the office of the Allfather. He's got the coffees in hand, and he's clearly trying to listen through the door to what Jesus and Hitler are saying. But the doors fly open, and we just get the tail end of their conversation as they're walking out the door. And it is the funniest line, I think, of the episode, because Hitler tells Jesus to go and pray on it. And Jesus turns to him and says, and I quote, "You shall not muzzle an ox when it treads out the grain." And Hitler looks at him and says, "What does that even mean?" And then Hoover 2 hands Jesus his coffee, and Jesus says, "Bless you, Hoover 2." And then he walks off. And then, as if it's not even could get even funnier, Hoover 2 hands Hitler his coffee. Hitler takes it, looks at him, and screams, "Sugar! I can't do it."
Yeah, yeah, sugar!
Yeah, and then he just turns and storms off. Well,
Hoover goes, "It's already in there. It's already like
so great." It was such a nothing scene, but it was just wonderful. That's the filler we like, folks.
Right.
That's good stuff. All right. Meanwhile, back at this temple, they're inching through it. Danny, Cassidy, and Tulip, they enter. There's prayer taking place. They're Hasidic Jews. It's all men. I know it's very taboo that they're walking through this temple. Forgive me for not knowing all the ins and outs of it, but they walk very defiantly through it. They're walking down this long hallway. This is where I was getting like, come on. And this is where I was like, what are they after? And Sean was like, well, clearly the Messiah.
I thought we were going to meet like a new kind of head person, like how the All-Father's kind of the head of the Catholic, or, you know, the Grail. I thought there might be a Jewish counterpart to that.
Yeah, yeah, me too. And I thought there was definitely not time for another person.
No, not that they'd have a big arc, but this would have been where I would have completely expected it to be Seth Rogen himself as a cameo, as like the most over-the-top Jewish stereotype person you could imagine. Just how the All-Father was the big glutton Pope person.
Yes, sure, definitely. Well, there was kind of one sitting in this room because... Yeah. He opens these doors to reveal, dun, 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 the real Humperdoo is there. And he's, you know, he's with a religious person who's obviously trying to teach him the ways, but Humperdoo, of course, unteachable.
God.
But Danny looks at Cassidy and Tulip, and she's just, you know, full of glee. She says she was skeptical at first when Jesse sent him to her for safekeeping. She thought, this is the chosen one. He's raping blocks of cheese. But his power and his love changed her, and it changed all of them. And she starts to play the soft shoe on a little Casio machine. And Humperdoo gets up and starts to dance. And she explains, you know, see how special he is. I could never let you take him. And of course, you know, no matter, off screen, we just hear a couple of punches, and Cassidy and Tulip are out the door with Humperdoo in tow. So
before we even get to them escaping, I continue to feel like Ruth Negga or Tulip is everyone watching always when they see Humperdoo, because she just has that look on her face, just like, what are you fucking talking about? Like, you know, they're so all inspired by him after he does the dance. And then did you notice it? He starts jerking off with the cane like the clones did.
Well, and clearly if he gets around a block of cheese, you know, that's off limits too.
So Cassidy and Tulip continue, like, them and Jesse basically are the only three people. Well, and even Air Star, I feel like those four people are the only ones who just kind of look around. They're like, really, this is what we're doing here? Okay, I guess. But everyone else is so enthralled with him. You know, God loves him. Jesus loves him. And he's just...
Yeah. And then he is able to... enrapture a whole group of Hasidic Jews.
Oh, did you think he was flying at first when he stood up on that?
I did.
And maybe they filmed it, but it looked like he just straight levitated. I was like, oh, shit.
So let's talk about that moment. So, yeah, they're getting away with him. They're walking back through the room of the men, all still in prayer. Danny screams, they're getting away with the Messiah. And stop him, stop him. And so they all start to kind of crowd around the three of them and separate Tulip and Cassidy from Humperdoo. And this is, where Humperdoo jumps up on a pew and does some weird, crazy moaning and mumbling. they all bow down and start to pray to him or worship him. But yeah, at first I did think, what? He can levitate too? No, wait a second. You know, and then I was like, oh, he's just standing on a pew. But they're so fooled, they probably even think, oh, he's...
He obviously has power over
nothing, and they're still just like, oh. So, but anyway, with all of them bent over in prayer, Humperdoo's able to walk right over to Tulip, take her hand, and walk right out the door with her. And as Cassidy is at the door, ready to leave right behind them, Danny demands to know where they are taking him. And he turns and gives this quick story, or actually it wasn't so quick, of Betsy Cullen, who lived down the road from him in Dublin. And she was a very devout woman who lost 5 of her 6 sons and her husband to the war. And then, wouldn't you know it, at the husband's wake, the final son also dies. And yet this Betsy Cullen, you know what? She still loves God. And you want to know why? Because she's a sucker, just like all of you. And, you know, he's talking to all of them in the temple. And then Cassidy says, you want to know what we're going to do with your Lord and Savior? We're going to kill him, and we're going to make God watch, all right? And then he turns and leaves. And there is just this hilarious little end beat to this scene where this man in the crowd says, I didn't even know we had a Messiah. And Danny just screams at him, that's because we didn't tell you, Eli. And then she punctuates it with, schmuck.
Yeah, it's a good wonderful way to kind of put a laugh at the end of that, because that Cassidy delivers that so hard to them. And it reminded me almost of just, I could see that same speech coming out of like someone from The Leftovers talking to some religious figure, you know, at that point, telling him how God does. Like, I could see Nora completely saying that. Just what a way to just tell an entire group of devout, you know, religious people that, you know, doesn't matter what your sense of God is, fuck you, because it's not even real. And you know, just the ultimate fuck you, because I thought he was going to turn around and just like start murdering people or something. But yeah, just he just punctuates it with, we're going to kill him, and it's not even going to matter. And so, yeah.
And it's good that it definitely rounds out the story and makes you understand what Tulip saw when she saw the picture of God on the wall at the church and got the idea. You know, that so there must have been something in Jesse's letter about the real Humperdoo is with Danny. You can go get him and use him as leverage against God. There had to be something like what, which first of all, that's a clue. Hell fucking oh. Why didn't, when Cassidy read it in the diner, why didn't he say, well, there is a clue in it, you know, like,
yeah.
But how would she have known that Humperdoo, if it wasn't in the letter?
I don't know. Of course, if it just said, if it was some kind of just clue and it just said something about Danny, then Cassidy may not have even known to say something about it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, because Cassidy didn't read it all. He handed it back to her. So that's true. Good point. All right. It was funny. To me, it went on a bit long, but again, loved it. And a scene that really didn't go on too long, but it was so great. But it was so weird at first. It opens up in a Pensacola, Florida police station. And we even get the title card, Pensacola. I was like, wait, they're in Pensacola? And here's this police chief we've never seen before. We come to learn his name is Chief Whitman. He is told he's got a long distance call, which makes him decide to abandon his lunch break to take the call. The man on the phone identifies himself as Nix, and Chief Whitman exclaims, it's been 14 months. I thought you were dead. We then see that the caller is Hoover 2, and he's been undercover this whole time. And he now says he has all the evidence he needs to stop these Grail bastards. And it's so funny, his line. He explains to his chief that it's a global conspiracy. Hitler and Jesus, they're taking orders from this mutilated maniac who wants to set off a nuclear war with a tap-dancing imbecile. And Nix exclaims that as long as there's a badge in his wallet, there's not going to be any damn apocalypse. To which Featherstone walks in and shoots him in the head, and he falls over dead. She sits down at the conference table and removes her disguise. Great scene. Wonderful. Fabulous. Loved this Chief Whitman. Too bad we didn't get more of him. Loved Hoover too. Too bad.
Well, I love Hoover too. He has a completely different accent, and yes. Yeah, he's just—it's like he's this hardcore young up-and-coming cop who doesn't care about the promotion. He's just there to save he's there to save the human beings, and he's so gung-ho, and then just think it's going to be all of a sudden this huge twist and turn,
mm-hmm.
and boom! No, I doubt we'll even see anything more about the Pensacola chief. I'm thinking this is just a way to tell us that Featherstone mm-hmm. really is the true number two to Air Star. Of course, I'm sure she'll probably try to tell him that he'll just be mad that Hoover 2's dead. But
yes, because he had big plans, romantic plans, I think, with that very attractive Hoover 2. And I will say this, Nix did a damn good job playing it off too, and not even being rocked by those sexual advances. We get this very quick scene. Again, it was funny. Humperdew is just hanging out of the car of Tulip, or hanging out of the back seat window of Tulip's car as they drive on. He's making all these happy moans, and he's definitely having a blast making all of his noises. Tulip and Cassidy are just sitting quietly in the front seat. You can definitely see it on their faces. They're looking a little unsure about their plan. I think it's possibly because they're feeling very sorry for Humperdew. Would you agree?
Yeah. I think they're also, again, I think what they're going to realize with Humperdew is that he is, and Jesus even kind of said this about him when he was talking to Tulip about how, you know, it was just that one sin I did, but Humperdew truly is a 100% innocent. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to be hard to just kill him. It'll be like, you know, I guess killing a baby in a sense.
Yeah, that's a really good point. He is for sure an innocent. Jesse couldn't kill him. You know, Jesse tried to kill him last season too. Couldn't kill him either. Anyway, final scene. Jesse is lying on the floor in his cell in hell. And Fior brings him back to that throne room. I think Fior is just somehow able to create these heaven illusions. I don't know. I hope we get an answer on that. But anyway, they're back in this throne room. Fior explains that it's just a projection. And of course, you know, he had a speedball a day habit, so it's hard to get into heaven with that. So Fior tells Jesse that if he accepts the offer, then he'll be set free. And a hilarious line here from Jesse. He says, just because he's got issues with God, he's not about to listen to some bird-faced dope fiend about replacing him. Calls Fior a bird-faced dope fiend.
Yeah, and this is where Fior says, okay, fine, this isn't heaven, but this is. And yes. That's when but you're right, when he takes him, quote, to the real heaven, it's a flashback. So he's he's definitely somehow either controlling the little hell projector machines, or he's found a way to project his thoughts onto, you know, so that Jesse is seeing what he thinks about or something.
Could it be that he's in charge while Hitler's away?
I actually kind of was just thinking, maybe not necessarily in charge, but maybe because he worked for heaven and now he's down, maybe he just works for them. Maybe he's just one of like the guards or something.
He knows all the ins and outs of the facility, all the workings and mechanics. So
he's the tech guy. He's the tech guy for him. Yeah.
So he's able to take Jesse into heaven back in 2015 and tells him to watch and listen. And we see God sitting on the throne, clearly annoyed, listening to all these prayers, like on a
old answering machine.
Answering machine. For folks who don't know what those are. Once upon a time, we had phones that plugged into walls, and to get messages, we had to have another piece of equipment that plugged into the phone that would record on a cassette tape. Google that. They did get digital after, I guess, a time, but it would record your messages, and you'd have to just like play them back.
We know God likes the old technology. He was using the VCR in his trailer.
He digs the 80s, so, man. Who can blame him? So. He is listening to all these prayers, clearly annoyed by them all. We see a younger Fior enter the throne room and explain that Genesis has escaped. And, you know, he's so sorry, not to worry. We'll get him back. You know, I know you left him in our care, and we'll go down to Earth and we'll get him back. And when his back is turned as he's leaving to go, start to make plans to get Genesis back, God immediately bolts straight up into the air, leaving heaven, shattering the ceiling and glass all falls behind him. It was very, it was a funny moment to show how he really got the fuck out of heaven just as quickly as he possibly could. We see the start of God's road trip as a biker. We knew he spent some time as a biker. He starts picking up the hitchhikers, having a grand old time.
This needs to be the new National Lampoon's Heavenly Vacation.
Yeah, yes.
They even play the vacation theme.
Oh, yeah, okay. I knew it was familiar. Okay. So his journey takes him to New Orleans, and of course we get the momentous dog suit costume in the window.
And yeah, like, he passes the homeless guy, yes. And you think he's going to turn back and help him, but no, his eye caught something in the window.
Yeah, it was a good, it was a good fake out. Then we get that one scene of him driving full dog suit, head-to-toe dog suit with the sunglasses. It's hilarious.
Yeah, like, and then Jesse is, why the dog suit?
Yeah, cut back to Jesse contemplating all he's learned from this projection that Fiore has shared with him. And he does say, that dog suit's a bit weird. And Fiore says, the dog suit is disgusting. And Jesse says, this can't be all God is doing. He must have some bigger plan. And Fiore says, oh, that's right. He does have a bigger plan. He's been hard at work for months now making his creation part 3. And Jesse says, that's his plan. He's going to replace us. And Fiore says, unless, and points to the throne. And that's where the episode ends. And that is a weird, abrupt ending, like you said.
Yeah, because we see God sewing together this bird tentacle weird, something real gross looking, which I guess that must be what Tulip saw in the cage that she looks so disgusting. So we are confirmed now it's not a
or a guinea pig. Right. Which is what Hairstar asked. Are you have guinea pigs, sire? So I definitely think this felt like they're doing these episodes just like we at Mike TV have been recording episodes doubling up. The episodes do seem to book each other. They seem to be going in twos. And I feel like whatever's going to happen the next episode is going to kind of wrap this up. So I have the show names and the show descriptions of the final 3 episodes. Do you want to hear them? They're all very brief. They are not too spoilery, but any spoiler alert, anybody who doesn't want to be spoiled, skip ahead like 15 seconds. We're going to just read through these. Are you ready, Dean?
Yes.
So episode 8 is called Fear of the Lord. And the description is Tulip and Cass struggle to keep Humperdew hidden from the Grail while Jesse remains MIA. Not much there. Episode 9 is called Overture. It says, this is a little spoilery, Jesse, Tulip, and Cassidy mount one final assault on Masada as the apocalypse review begins. So it looks like we are going to end in Masada, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then episode 10, the final, is entitled End of the World. And it says, the curtain falls on the apocalypse review as the fate of the world is decided and the long journey of a preacher and his friends comes to an end. Hmm. Oh, my God. I'm a little sad by that one.
It sounds like, next episode is going to be all about probably telling us God. I think we're going to get, the full reveal about what God's plan is and what he hopes to accomplish with the apocalypse. And then it sounds like the last two, obviously, as the penultimate sometimes usually are, is that sounds like the big action setup, and then maybe a little bit of action at the beginning of the last episode with a lot of, closure. Hopefully a lot of closure.
Well, Featherstone, so we're going to have to see, I think we're going to have to wrap up this heaven-hell stuff with Jesse. We're going to have to get him back to life by the end of the next episode. We know that's happening by what I read for description of 9.
Right.
Plus, we're going to have to see Hairstar getting possibly eaten, maimed some more, and Featherstone rescue him. We saw a little bit of that in the trailer. They showed a little bit of the guy that has captured Hairstar. So I don't know how long they'll make that scene, or you know, I just don't know. It's a lot of speed traveling around because this is still, we don't even know how Hare Star and the dingo survived the explosion. That was never explained.
But they've also, like we talked last episode, the fact that Hare Star and Masada agents seem to have the ability to, you know, jog from
warp light speed
corner of the one corner of the globe to another. I think, you know, they can always just show a cut of a freight ship and then
So, but so Featherstone, we know, is going to rescue him. We saw a little bit of a clip of that. She's going to get him back to Masada. Then everything's going to still converge back in Masada. Seems a little. And meanwhile, the Saint was very idle this episode. And are we going to see Eugene again? Is he just going to stay in jail? Is that it for Eugene? That seems very anticlimactic.
Where is he in Australia still? Is that where he got arrested?
Yes, Melbourne jail, right?
Mm-hmm. I bet the Saint went to go get Eugene.
Oh, good. I hope so.
I don't know why.
It could be the Saint's change of heart moment.
Maybe.
The Saint is a good person, deserves love.
Well, you know what? I'd more than David, sure. Yeah.
You know, I'd be fine if we manage in every episode we do from here on, from now until infinity, manage to give work a Legion reference in, or I should say, a Leftovers reference into every episode. Relate this back to the Legion or the Leftovers. We should make a game out of that.
We tend to usually do that one way or the other anyway.
Let's start paying attention to that. Okay. All right, that's a teaser, folks. So we'll wrap up. This might be our shortest episode yet. I don't even know. I don't know how it's been. But anyway, so Dean, why don't you give out our Twitter handles to the fine folks, please?
All right. You can find me on Twitter at Rockdale_Tiger. You can find the show, I feel like this is a test, at MikeTV1.
Yep.
No underscore or anything?
No underscore.
There we go. At MikeTV1. Follow us, tweet us, retweet us. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. If you got questions, if there's anything, even if it's not Preacher related, if there's another show that you're watching that you want us to talk about for a few minutes, we'll be sure to do that. But let us know what you want. You can also interact with us on Facebook through the Radio Labyrinth fan page, the Radio Shack. So if you're a member of that, which most likely you probably are, then if not, go join it. But then you can find us on there or comment to us on there. So we and glad you could be with us again this week. Soon you'll be able to find us all by our lonesome as our own feed gets created. Then you can like us, review us. We'll start putting all that at the end. But until then, just say hey to us online. We'll say hey back.
Yeah, so we'll probably finish up our Preacher coverage on the Radio Labyrinth feed, and then we will start American Horror Story coverage on our own feed. I think that's the tentative plan here. So we'll definitely send out a lot of reminders on that. We'll expand our social media. We'll get an email for crying out loud. We'll do it. We'll get, you know, we'll get into the 21st century. And we will then start covering Watchmen also. I mean, they're all, those shows are going to really be upon us really soon. I think American Horror Story is like next week.
Yeah, that's what I'll say. I can't remember if it's next week or the week after. It's coming soon.
It looks really scary. I hope it's not too scary for me. I hope I don't get too scared.
You said you don't really watch, you haven't watched too many of the seasons of American Horror Story.
I only watched last season. I watched the apocalypse season because the world stuff interests me. And I understood it was a call back to lots of previous stuff. Like, I get what they were doing, and it didn't scare me at all.
There's been like one or two seasons where, well, they usually always try to have like scary stuff in them.
Yeah,
but they're all pretty tongue-in-cheek, and this one looks like it's definitely playing off the obviously the 80s slasher films. So I'm gonna assume this is going to be like very campy, you know, intentionally campy and cheesy. So there will probably be some jump scares here and there, but it'll probably be pretty hilarious going through.
I can probably handle it.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to this one too, because I'm hoping with the subject matter of being like kind of this 80s horror camp thing, that Ryan Murphy does have a tendency to get a little like overly political and pushy with his material, and maybe he won't be able to do that as much with this. He did a good job. Even the apocalypse wasn't too bad, but the one before that, the cult, the one that was about like
oh yeah
getting elected,
Yeah, I heard that was unwatchable.
It was pretty over. The first few episodes were good because it actually made fun of both sides pretty well, I think, about the craziness of some of the extreme alt-right type people, but then also the hysteria of like extreme left-wing people, you know, as soon as Trump's elected, acting as if the world's going to end the next day. But it did hit you over the head pretty hard throughout it with, you know, with very obvious political opinions. So, and I, you know, that can be appropriate with some things, but I don't like in a fictional show.
No. Well, I hope that in the coming episodes, we'll be able to talk a little bit more about Mayans, as I'm excited to hear you're catching up on that show.
Yes, slowly but surely, I will eventually get my motorcycle to Southern California or Northern California, wherever they are this time.
I predict by episode 5 of this season, you are going to be like, holy shit, oh my God, because you're still in the first season.
Yeah.
And I think by about the halfway point, you know how like Sons used to do that at the end of every episode, you'd be like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah.
This starts to do that too.
Yeah, the biggest problem is just that college football has started and NFL football now. So like now my weekends, which usually I would have time to binge a show or, you know, watch a few episodes, I find myself watching football instead. So
such a problem. I know.
Football,
this thing called the football. I understand. I get it. I find myself watching a lot of it too, although I could not make it through that Falcons game on Sunday.
Oh, they weren't happy. It wasn't good watching them.
Anyway, but we digress. So here we are signing off. Thank you again, Dean. Thank you, everybody, for listening. We will be back with episode 8 just as soon as we possibly can. We're going to work to get this one up before episode 8 airs, getting us back on track. Woo-woo. And we will talk to you next time. Thanks again.
Bye.